And tonight on Coast to Coast AM, the physics book, Clifford Pickover, back on Coast to Coast. We're going to talk about the Big Bang, quantum resurrection. We're going to get into some real science with the way that Cliff describes it. I'm looking forward to this. We're going to learn something right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he's a prolific author, Cliff Pickover. He has published more than 40 books on topics ranging from science and mathematics to art, history, religion. He received his PhD from Yale University's Department of Molecular Biophysics and Biochemistry. He holds more than 80 U.S. patents. His research has received considerable attention from media outlets, from CNN, Wired, to the New York Times. And we are back with Cliff on Coast to Coast AM. Cliff, how are you?
Great. Great to be here.
Looking forward to this. Great book, by the way. Not only is it a great book, but the pictures that you selected in the illustrations, absolutely riveting. I really enjoy it.
Thanks very much.
We're talking about all these different things here. You have a passion for physics.
Yeah, I mean, some people hear about physics and they might think, oh, this is kind of dry with equations, you know, and somewhat boring. But actually, you know, I don't think anything challenges the imagination like physics. It lets us think about really strange ideas like quantum mechanics and relativity. And physicists, they get to explore everything from the tiniest subatomic particles all the way up to the huge galaxies. I don't think any other field has quite the range.
I got an email from one of our listeners a couple days ago, Cliff, and they were all excited that you're going to be on. And they said, please ask him if a black hole came through this area, would it be able to suck in the entire solar system? I think it could suck in the entire galaxy, don't you?
Well, if a black hole just wandered through nearby the Earth solar system, it would throw the planets out of orbit. It could just suck in the Earth itself. But, you know, black holes not too long ago were thought to be just theoretical ideas, and now we know that they're at the centers of the many galaxies, like our Milky Way galaxy, and the gravity is so big that nothing, not even light, can escape.
Cliff, could they be portals to other parallel universes?
That's one of the ideas. The odd thing about a black hole is that they have so much gravity concentrated in so little space that at the very center, it's a little speck we call the singularity. It's the hypothesis. We don't know too much about those specks because they're sort of shielded from us, but those could be portals to other universes, other regions of space, and other regions of time.
Fantastic. Now, you have a fascination with Isaac Newton, Albert Einstein. How come?
Well, I think if you ask anyone who are the most important physicists that shaped our understanding of the world and how it works, it's two people you mentioned, Einstein and Newton. I mean, Einstein in particular revolutionized what we think about with space and time. And, you know, I don't think there's ever going to be an individual quite on par with Einstein. You know, everyone, if you think of the word genius, the first thing that I think snaps into many people's heads is Einstein.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I don't know where he got his brain, but if he had a computer in his day, there's no telling, Cliff, what he would have been able to do.
Yeah, and he punched through into popular culture, too. Right? Not too many physicists today you would know on the street, but when he came to New York in, I think it was around 1921, there was a motorcade, and thousands of people lined the streets for that motorcade. Think of that happening too often today with the scientists coming to visit, do you?
Yesterday, Cliff, NASA announced that most likely there's water on Europa, beyond a question about a doubt, underneath, some kilometers of ice, and that it's warm. And if it is warm, that could be a pretty good habitat for life. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I wish we could. Of course, NASA is planning all sorts of projects, but there are a few moons in the solar system that can contain water. You mentioned Europa. That's a great candidate. The challenge is, of course, to first get a craft there and then punch through the icy crust that surrounds it to get to the water within. Wherever there's water, you know, there's a chance that we're going to find life there. So that would be really fascinating.
Do you think they ever will?
I think that, you know, alien life, at least primitive alien life, is is, you know, quite common through the galaxy and the universe. Europa has an interesting chance because the water is warmed by it's a sort of a tidal gravity being pushed and pulled by Jupiter, so that it can actually make the water liquid. And, you know, more than frozen water, liquid water gives us a good chance that at least some kind of primitive chemistry, biochemistry, and life could have been kicked off.
Cliff, we're going to go through various aspects of physics with you tonight, but give me your take. And I just love getting different thoughts from different people in the know. Give me your take on what you think the Big Bang was or is.
Well, what we know about the Big Bang is that it took place about, 13.7 billion years ago. And it's a time where all the matter and energy of the universe was compressed, very, very intense, a lot of mass. It's like taking a balloon with dots on it and letting it, if we go back in time, get smaller and smaller and smaller until all the matter merges. So all evidence points to the Big Bang, and for 13.7 years, you know, we've been expanding ever since, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, our entire universe. And, you know, people wonder, well, will that expansion keep on going forever? Will we re-collapse? These are the questions, the big questions that astrophysicists ask.
Well, for this to happen 13.7 billion years ago, why didn't it happen 15 billion years ago, 20 billion years ago?
Well, we know the universe, this Big Bang happened about that time because we can look at galaxies today and how the speeds with which they're flying apart. Now, who knows why 13.7? There are theories that, the Big Bang is not the only Big Bang going off, but there may be other universes with Big Bang-like starts.
Mm-hmm.
And those, the people in those universes or the creatures or the empty, maybe there are creatures in them, but they would ask the same questions. Why was ours 12 billion? Why was ours 10 billion? Of course, we're here to ask it because we needed some time for our planets and galaxies to form. And then over the billion years of Earth was quite hot and volcanic for a while. So time was needed before humans like us could start asking the very question you're asking today.
Well, but before the compression of whatever this was, okay, part of the Big Bang, as it compressed and then blew up, let's say, the bang that I think a bang was, what was before it? That's what I'm having a heck of a time trying to understand.
That's the $64,000 question. Scientists can go back, very close to that moment, 13.7 billion years ago, but there's a point where they can't very easily go beyond because time is so short that most of our theories that we know about today can't answer that very question you're asking. You know, there's something called the Planck time. It's a tiniest of instants. And what happened before the Planck time, it's hard to say. I mean, some people have this theory that the Big Bang is a part of something happening over and over again, like an eternal recurrence, back and forth. But it's very hard to go back before that little Planck time and answer the very question that is on your mind.
It really is. It's frustrating because you have to assume that at that moment, at 13.7 billion years, this matter that, you know, was created out of the Big Bang had to have been there before that. I mean, it just didn't go, you know, bing, here it is.
Well, one question is, how could something so fantastic come from nothing? You know, how does something come from nothing? And scientists have lots of theories. They say, the energy of the Big Bang is you know, forcing outward, is counteracted by the gravity pulling inward. So this sort of thing could happen every now and then in formations of universes. But people just don't know.
You know, go ahead.
One theory is that the universe is like a membrane, and these things go splat, splat, splat. You know, every many billions of years, and so maybe we're just the latest splat. And then maybe another membrane, they call these, will splat again and start the universe ticking again.
My mother used to ask my mother, Cliff, I said, Mom, tell me, what is God? And she said, George, he always was and always will be. Now, doesn't that sound a little like the Big Bang?
It does. I mean, if you want to think of God as all-powerful, omniscient, perhaps God exists outside of space and time and can be almost like an observer of the whole thing. We're within the laws of physics. We're within the universe. It's hard to imagine everything from within, but a creature outside of space and time maybe can see all of space and time in one blinding instant. Maybe there is no time for being like God. It's like space-time being a big loaf of bread, and he sees the beginning and the end in just one shot.
Are you frustrated by that too, Cliff? Just asking that question, how did it start?
Well, I think there, along with the God question, there's facets of the universe we can never understand. I mean, scientists keep trying and trying and trying to see further back in time, understand the laws of physics, try to unify all the laws of physics into a formula you can maybe write on a T-shirt. But how do we know that humans like us can really understand it all? I mean, we're not gods. If you look at a monkey and a monkey's brain, they cannot understand calculus and black holes and big bangs, right? And so maybe there's thoughts that we're going to have trouble thinking because we're a little bit limited by our 3-pound brains we carry around in our head.
There is some unknown denominator here that is probably right under our noses, and we just can't see it.
And maybe we're going to need all sorts of prosthetics like computers and various tools, in the future to help us penetrate this infinite veil of reality. Maybe we can't do it our own. Maybe computers and technology and even art and poetry in some way or brain augmentation will help us think these deeper thoughts.
I am convinced that, there's an alien life form out there on other planets. A lot of people will say they're dimensional. I'd like to believe that they're on planetary systems that are somewhat similar to Earth. What's your take on that, Cliff?
Well, I think we know that when we look on Earth for life, it exists in the most bizarre environments. You could hardly believe it. Miles under the Earth in darkness and in ice and in boiling water. So it looks like whatever's possible in nature tends to be realized. And I think I would agree with you that we see life everywhere on this Earth. It's hard not to think that life is evolving on other worlds, maybe quite different than the life on Earth. But, we see biomolecules floating in outer space that suggest that the type of molecules you need to kickstart life are everywhere.
Let's talk a little bit more about these parallel universes, Cliff. Are you a believer that they exist?
Well, parallel universes is... I would say yes to start out, but parallel universes are all these neat, different flavors. I mean, some parallel universes can be visualized like layers in a cake or holes in Swiss cheese. And one of the wildest parallel universes is something you would consider if our universe is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if our universe is infinite or not, but it could well be. And if you take the way you can shuffle matter like a deck of cards and... You look at the way you can shuffle it, somewhere in an infinite universe, the deck is going to be shuffled again in the same way, which suggests in an infinite universe, Cliff and George are sitting.
That's right.
Connected by a phone line and talking the same subject.
That is true. If they're connected, would it be like bubbles stuck together?
Well, that's one. One way of looking at bubbles stuck together or buds. Buds of a tree, buds continually budding. There's lots of ways to visualize it, or branches on a tree, where each branch is a different parallel universe.
Could there be a void between the universes where they're not connected, but there's something, whether it's antimatter, whatever, in between them?
Yes, there could be a void, and the question is, how are these universes connected? Even if they exist, can we get from one to the other? Is that separation or void you're talking about too great? Or can we somehow get through the bud point to access a parallel universe? I think right now no one really knows.
Now I know why religions were created, because it's the only way to logically come up with something, some excuse, so we don't go crazy, Cliff.
Yeah, as far apart physics seems from religion, you could see from the type of topics we're discussing now, that line becomes kind of thin when we're talking about the start of the universe and the end of the universe and the parallel universe. So it's a good way for scientists to get close to those almost spiritual-sounding topics.
And there's no doubt. There are several chapters in your book where you talk about different things in the universe, and one could be where basically the universe splits up and basically falls apart. How could that happen?
Well, that's something that scientists call the Big Rip. You know, our universe right now is expanding. It's getting less dense. The galaxies are flying apart from each other. Well, if that expansion got faster and faster, which we think it is, there are several possibilities. But one of them is that it could get so fast that the Milky Way galaxy we're in, you know, we won't see much outside of it because all the other galaxies have flown away faster than the speed of light. And if it's really fast, eventually our solar system will rip apart because the expansion is so fast, and even atoms will rip apart. But we don't really know. The fate of the universe can take several paths, but one of them is the cosmological Big Rip.
It is amazing what is out there. It really is. We're going to talk with you about time travel a little bit later on tonight and get your take on that, as well as, you know, old technologies that have been around this planet for a long, long time. Of all the chapters that you have written in this immense book, the physics book, do you have a favorite?
Oh, the difficulty was condensing it into 250 milestones. And physics is so infinite. How could I possibly pick the 250 most intriguing and get all those pretty color pictures with it? But I think what you just hinted at, some of the ancient ones that people, you know, probably never heard of, those are pretty neat. You know, what nature creates some crazy physics, and even, you know, in BC era, you know, people were creating computer-like devices. So I think some of the, we're talking about some of the modern stuff in the parallel universes, but some of those ancient thoughts and ancient devices are pretty cool.
I like the way that you've got everything broken down by time, basically.
It's chronological.
Yeah, it really is. And I wonder if we added another 20 years to the end of your last one here was 2009. If we added 20 more years to it, I wonder what would be in between. What kind of topics, what kind of physics breakthroughs do you think would be filling that up?
Well, I think some of the most interesting questions are trying to unite the big and the small. You know, the big is this thing called general relativity that says how planets warp space. And the small is quantum mechanics that talks about how atoms and subatomic particles work. But they're like two different theories. They don't come together too well. Probably in the next 20 years, we'll understand more about how the ultra-big and the ultra-small can be defined and understood a little better.
If you look at the various years, 1980 to 2009, a lot of things happened in between. How much more have we advanced in terms of knowledge, Pick, from then to now?
Well, I think the technology really helps. The things really got kick-started in the 1900s when we started understanding quantum mechanics, how the atoms worked. In fact, we hardly knew there were atoms before around the turn of the century, and there's still debate about that. So I think science is sort of accelerating faster and faster and faster, and that's why there's so many interesting breakthroughs.
We're going to talk about some time travel with you, Cliff. Cliff Pickover, our special guest. We'll be back. With our special guest tonight, Cliff Pickover, we're talking about his latest book, The Physics Book, with deep inside stories. We'll be back with more with Cliff in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Cliff, I marveled as a kid at the movie The Time Machine. I also liked Back to the Future. Time travel, what do you think? Possible to go back, to go forward?
Well, there's a whole long, interesting history of time travel. Isaac Newton thought of time as a river. And Einstein said, well, that river can bend. And finally, more recently, scientists have said, well, maybe the river can be made to go back. The laws of physics seem to permit it. The neat thing about time travel is that it's not really a question of can you. It's certainly possible to time travel into the future. Scientists have shown that if you travel high speed and come back to the Earth, you basically can come back thousands of years into the Earth's future, even if it just took a short amount of time for you, if you could travel fast. And if you go near like a black hole, that slows down time. Any gravity slows down time. In fact, the time in your basement is running slower, slightly, than the roof of your home. But so going forward in time actually seems to be easier. Going backward in time is a little bit harder. You can imagine all the paradoxes that can result. But the laws of physics don't seem to prevent it.
Cliff, is time like a videotape recorder? Though, you know, let's say you go back to the moment that Jesus was there, or you go back to Noah's flood. Has time been recorded somehow, like it's on videotape?
Well, a lot of people wonder if you could go back to Jesus's time, how come we don't see thousands and thousands of time travelers going back to observe? The whole our histories would be all crowded out by time travelers from the future. Getting to your question, some people think that if you could go back in time, you'd actually split the universe and you'd be in a parallel universe. So even if you went back in time and changed history, it would change sort of the history of this other universe, whereas your old one would stay intact. And that's how you could avoid the so-called grandfather paradox. So if you went back in time and killed your own grandfather, you know, how would you be born so that you go back in time?
That's
you
right.
Avoid some of that.
So true. What do you mean by quantum immortality?
That is how the book concludes, on this very bizarre concept of quantum immortality. And this is the most mind-stretching concept, I think, in the book. It's very science fictionist, but actual physicists think about it. There's a sense that whenever in the quantum world, the subatomic world, when there's a choice, the world follows both choices. It's a certain type of quantum mechanics. You know, it's not, if an atom can go up or down, well, the universe branches and one universe goes one way, one universe goes the other way. With quantum immortality, it suggests you might never die. Let me see if I can give a thought experiment. No one should try this in their homes. If you had a radioactive particle that had a 50-50 chance of going off, and it would trigger a gun that would shoot you. You know,
yeah, don't do this at home, folks.
Don't do this at home. In one universe, you would die, but in another one, you would live. And that's the only universe you would remember. And so you would seem to actually live forever, because there may always be a chance that you'd live, and you'd go on and on and on. It's a very bizarre concept, and it has to do with this many-worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics that says the universe is always branching into different possibilities, so all these possibilities exist where you're going to stay alive.
Is there some part of physics, Cliff, that still baffles you?
I would say a
lot, huh?
Quantum mechanics, this subatomic stuff, I think baffles all physicists. It's the most counterintuitive of all things. In quantum mechanics, particles can be two places at once. They can communicate instantaneously across the cosmos. Things are fuzzy. Particles behave like waves. That it's all very baffling, and I think many physicists have almost given up trying to understand it. They said, you know, it's a the theory is shut up and just calculate. You know, we can't possibly understand it, but it works. It explains how our devices like lasers and computers work. And since it works, we just accept it, deal with it, move on. But the human mind might never fully get it.
Cliff, give me your take on life itself, its existence, how it might have started. Let's take God out of the equation for a moment, though I don't think you really can. How did it start? Not the Big Bang, but life itself.
Yeah, well, if we go back in time, it looks like life started just about as soon as it could on Earth. The minute the planet cooled down and there's liquid water around, life started. Now, I don't think we know how the both very primitive, you know, combinations of DNA and proteins and RNA, what life was back so many billions of years ago, but obviously it did start. And through time, the miracles that intelligent creatures like ourselves came about, because, you know, intelligence is not necessarily an inevitable part of evolution. I mean, rats and beetles do quite fine without having the intelligence that we have. And I think, you know, if we're going to try to find spacefaring creatures out in the universe, they're going to have intelligence and manual dexterity. You know, they have to be smart, but they have to have something like a hand or tentacle to manipulate objects. And that could be quite rare in the universe. You know, on Earth, you know, you might have spiders that are very dexterous, can manipulate their arms very well, but they're not smart. And you could have smart dolphins, but, you know, they can't really do much with their flippers. To get both in one creature, wow, that's something.
And here we are.
And here we are with both.
Well, and the complexities for life are just unbelievable to me. I mean, I am in marvel over this planet, for example. We need water to live. Grass needs it. Trees need it. We need it. We need water to live. What kind of a design for a planet that would have it rain? Because without the rain, you're not going to get the water for, let's say, the trees or in the lakes and things like that. How would this be designed to work like that? I mean, just think of that simple possibility that rain allows you to live, water allows you to live, and it comes to us. Who would create that?
It is truly incredible. And I think you need both that water and the land. I mean, in a total water world, you could get life forms starting, but can you imagine trying to manipulate things underwater? You wouldn't even be really looking out at the cosmos, looking out at the sky. You'd be in the water. You almost need water to kickstart things, and the challenge of the land to, you know, evolve these intelligent creatures ourselves. And to get all that at once, and to get, we have a magnetic field that helps stabilize our ozone layer and protects us from the sun. And there's so many things that come together to create this beautiful Earth that I am in awe, and I'm sure you're in awe.
That's why I have to conclude, Cliff, that there's got to be intelligent design behind it. I mean, beyond what any great architect could come up with. I mean, the little nuances, just like you said, you know, something to block, you know, bad rays from hitting us from the sun and things like that. I mean, however it was designed, everything was considered. Everything.
So much has to come together. You know, the fixed axis of rotation of the Earth keeps the climate good. But, of course, you know, we want to be total scientists. We could say if the universe is huge, if there may be multiple universes, well, with the luck of shuffling the cards, you're going to create another Earth-like planet. People are finding planets all the time now out in outer space. But even if we do find a water world out there, for it all to come together, all the billions of years needed to form something like us, which I tend to believe we needed all that time to come about, well, it is amazing, I have to admit.
If you could travel in time and go backward, where would you go?
Ooh.
And how far back?
Well, the question is, can I come back or do I have to stay there?
Well, we'll say for this interview at least, you can come back.
Okay. Because, you know, I often ask, would you rather go forward in time or go back in time and stay? And I wouldn't want to stay in the past because you can think of medicine was crude, the status of women, you know, didn't exist back in time. And, you know, the future probably holds cures to every disease. But if I could go back in time, I think I'm curious, like many others, to look at some of the religious events, whether it be, you know,
me
like
too.
Jesus or other religious figures, just to see what that was all about.
A small part of me, just a little part of me, wants to go back, save as much money as I can, and buy Apple computer stock.
Yeah, if we could go back just 10 years.
And
I
just
guess,
sit on it.
We'd be rich.
Yep, you sure right. could. But I would too. I would like to go back to those biblical periods. I would love to have seen Jesus. I would have loved to have just watched him do what he did and be a witness to that. That would be fascinating to me. It would be fascinating to witness the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk. You know, it would be fascinating to see the tragedy of World War II and see that unfold. Truly remarkable. But you know what? I guess when you look at traveling back in the time, we're living in probably one of the most interesting moments right now. And I'm not sure I would trade that. Would you?
I don't think so, because I love my computer. I love modern medicine with antibiotics. And can you imagine living before anesthesia for operations? You know, I wouldn't trade that for anything. Even as romantic as the past would be, probably if you and I went back to the Middle Ages to live, you know, with the knights in shining armor, it would probably be a pretty bad existence compared to today.
Well, we'd be used to running water and bathrooms and things. I don't think we could handle it.
I know I'm not that sturdy.
I'm not going to an outhouse.
Right.
But in terms of traveling to the future, you know, I'm content with tomorrow. As far as I'm concerned, tomorrow's the future. And, you know, day by day is good enough for me.
I tend to agree with you, but I bet, you know, we, you know, had some life-threatening illness. Hey, let's jump 50 years and cure all cancers and, you know, live 50 years longer maybe, or whatever it may be. Like you, I think we're both content now, but if the need arises, I'd love to make use of some of that advanced technology.
What is the Fermi paradox?
The Fermi paradox is related to some of this alien life questions. This is a fascinating paradox in a history of UFOs and aliens. It was around 1950 where a famous scientist, Enrico Fermi, asked, why haven't we been contacted by extraterrestrials? After all, the Milky Way galaxy alone has something like 250 billion stars. Why haven't we been contacted? And, of course, they thought about this. They thought of it as a paradox. And, well, advanced alien life could exist, but we're unaware of it. It may also be very difficult to travel between the stars. Well, we know it seems to be pretty difficult. And a man named Frank Drake in 1960 came up with that famous Drake equation, where he actually tried to pick a probability of, you know, communication with aliens. You know, what are the chances? And in the book, I have this long equation. It has to do with, you know, what's the chances of Earth-like planets developing? What's the chances of creatures on that becoming intelligent and developing technology? And finally, what's the chances that those creatures will live long enough without destroying themselves to start signaling and allowing us to communicate with them?
Well, you know, he was responsible for the SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and I'm not sure they're going to find intelligence that way. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Some people, instead of looking out into the cosmos, are looking inside themselves with strange drugs like DMT, where people are claiming to see alien life forms under the influence of this drug. You know, people debate, well, is this just a hallucination or is this something more real? But the brain and the mind are so fascinating that even if it takes us a long time to discover extraterrestrials from other worlds, the mind has a whole realm to explore.
What do you think of, you know, things like the Hubble Space Telescope and what it has done for us?
I mean, the Hubble was truly amazing. This is a telescope put out into our orbit about the size of a big bus. And the picture that we've gotten through it over the years, I think it was around 1990 that was kicked off, have been stunning. We've learned so much about the universe. We've learned about planets around other stars. We learned about this dark energy, which is seeming to make the universe expand faster and faster. We learned about black holes in the center of galaxies. So something like the Hubble telescope was really, I think, elevated humankind. And that's why out of the 250 milestones in the book, I decided let's give one of those milestones to the Hubble telescope.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad we've updated the telescope. The one picture that just fascinates me the most is when they just took that shot into the void darkness of space about the size of a dime, And then when they look at it, you've got hundreds and hundreds of galaxies, not stars, but galaxies in nothing. You can't see it with the naked eye. There's nothing there. But when you aim the Hubble Space Telescope out there, in the size of a dime, hundreds of little galaxies that it got. That's a great picture. You remember that one?
Yeah, it's humbling. As you're saying, you point the telescope into the darkest, seemingly nothingness region of space. Nothing seems to be there. You let the exposure, like almost like a camera with the shutter open, and wow, like you're saying, whole galaxies. You know, each galaxy having billions of stars. Just it shows you, no matter where you're looking in space, it looks like there's stuff, galaxies, stars, planets.
You're a scientist, Cliff. Have you concluded that there's something else out here, maybe God, that's part of this equation?
You know, I can't say, because the definite, you know, depends what God is, right? There's the biblical God who is more, you know, smites the wicked, and, you know, you pray and your enemy gets killed. And there's like a physics God, which is like the beautiful order and harmony of the universe and the symmetries. And so I think I'm somewhere in between there. But I think I get close to God in a kind of humbleness, like we were talking about before. My mind, isn't it amazing what we've understood, what we might not be able to understand, but what we've been able to understand through the eons? I mean, after all, why did our brain, which might have evolved to help us run from lions on the African savannah, how can me and you be talking today about the Big Bang and black holes? That is amazing. Time will tell. You know, as we go out into the universe more and more and more, you know, will we see more evidence of a God? Will we see things we just can't understand? Who knows?
What will happen in the next couple of years that might be on the horizon that some great scientist is working on that most of us probably have no idea what he's doing? What's out there? Do you know?
Well, I think we're going to just maybe discover evidence of other dimensions of space. Right now, we seem to live in three big dimensions, up, down, right, left, back, forth. And a lot of physical theories deal with hyperspace, higher dimensions. String theory postulates, you know, like 10 dimensions or 11 dimensions. I think we're going to be learning more about that. Hopefully, we'll be learning more about how to get cleaner energy. Some people think fusion research could lead that way. I guess the key is to make sure the human species keeps surviving without blowing itself off or doing damage.
There might be too many other people out there, though, Cliff, that have their own agenda, and we may not be able to get the things done we want to get done.
Well, look at politics today, right? Hard to get things done.
Same thing.
So we can hope that smart heads will prevail. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about writing books like this physics book is that I think kids have to be educated a lot about science. They need to be stimulated about science. So when the politicians are making all these tough decisions about where to spend money and what to fund in science and where the dangers are, we'll have, you know, kind of a more educated population and hopefully politicians, so that there's a lot of logic in their thinking, if you know what I mean.
Cliff, we're going to talk about some fascinating curiosities that you highlight in your physics book when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.